It is a Friday here at 77 WABC. John Gambling and Yasmir Michael Bloomberg. Good morning.
Good morning. And you thought winter would never come.
I was hoping winter would never come.
It was chilly out this morning. The last couple of days have been chilly.
Yeah, and you got a rainy weekend coming up.
We had
snow flurries.
I was driving into the parking lot at Brooklyn College for an event, and there were snowflakes coming down.
I threatened to call Vito. I saw five of them.
I counted them. I named them, numbered them.
I threatened to call Vito Tirso to see if the chains were on the trucks.
Yeah. I might point out that look at our streets. Have you seen any snow on our streets?
Completely.
Sanitation department doing a great job.
You are so silly. you had to deal, interestingly enough, with the big stink. I mean, that there's more to this than the smell, at least in my mind, because I think it was an interesting reaction. Both on the public side and the mayor's side.
You know, we live in a world where obviously after 9/11, everybody looks for problems or worries about problems. I would argue we're probably a little bit too sensitive, but that's easy to say when it happens. I worry like everybody else does. We don't know exactly what happened. The smell that people smelled was the smell, if you pardon using the word three times, of the chemical that is put into natural gas.
What's it called, mercaptan?
Yes, mercaptan. Natural gas is a colorless, odorless gas. And so if there's a leak, you wouldn't know it. And since it is lethal, if you breathe too much of it, we want to make sure, everybody wants to make sure, that you know there's a leak. So they put this gas into it. The city has these monitoring stations throughout the city, and there was no elevated level of natural gas. But the smell clearly was there. So the chemical was in the air. And if there was extra natural gas, it wasn't big enough to really set off the sensors. Where did it come from? Possibilities are a chemical leak of somebody that uses this gas for other reasons. The possibility that because of all the rain, it came out of old garbage dumps. That's a possibility.
Staten Island has had an additional event.
Yeah, although it doesn't seem to be coming from Freshkills. But, you know, it could have come from a place in another state or something. Who knows? It could be that there wasn't very much of it, but just the inversion in the air that kept the air from gases from moving up but kept them low exacerbated a problem that you wouldn't have even known about that happened. Because there are things in the air all the time. But it turned out not to be serious, not to be life-threatening, not to have injured anybody, gave the newspapers and the television stations and you and your callers
absolutely. Lots
of things. I mean, you think I did this deliberately just so you'd have a good radio show?
Well, no, I don't think you did that. Let me ask you, were you pleased with the response from the city, and were there any things that weren't done that you will add to the program?
No, I was... we had a press conference scheduled at City Hall to announce a new director, a new commissioner for HRA, and we held the press conference for an hour trying to get more information because all the press was there, and that's what they really wanted to ask about. And I can't tell you in the next hour we got much more information. But the first thing is, did the city's detectors function? Was 911 able to answer the calls? Did we go out and look where we should have looked? Yeah, I think all of those things worked well. You know, nobody gives Joe Bruno credit. Joe Bruno is the commissioner of the Office of Emergency Management. And we have all of these plans that we've worked together to make police and fire and health and transportation, all these agencies work together. We did everything that we should have done. Did we find out exactly where it came from? No. But, you know, that's the real world. You're not going to...
During the event, the more important thing that I thought was just like the question I asked you was the city ready, and did we have the things?
The two
in
things:
place
one, the city was ready. Yes, and number two, did we get the information out? Yes, and I think the most important thing is, in retrospect, we didn't get out any information that we didn't know to be correct. You know, everybody always wants to
speculate.
I'll never forget when the bombing took place in 1993 at the World Trade Center in the basement. For 2 hours, somebody was reporting that there was a big subway crash. You know, it just when somebody says, is it this, is it this? If you don't know, I keep telling everybody, all the elected officials, just say you don't know. people are afraid to say, I don't know, and so they guess and they make up. Now, sometimes I can tell you we have this report. It looks like it's legit. It comes from reputable sources. And you say, you know, we are told that ABC. And then later on, turns out that it was XYZ. But you want to make sure that people have confidence in the information they're getting, even if it isn't complete information. And the real world is, there isn't complete information. It's the old thing in the classroom of, what would you do if the following facts are true? Well, that's relatively easy compared to establishing what the following facts are.
And once you have the facts, the rest of it you can put together,
yeah,
pretty much.
All absolutely.
Right. Let me take a break right here. There's more to come. You were in Washington. We'll talk about that, and we will do it right after this. We continue. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC on the John Gambling Show. Made a trip to Washington this week. You were down there talking about security money and radios.
Homeland Security. It's the same story all the time. Hopefully they will listen. The issue is the following with Homeland Security money. Because the Founding Fathers gave 2 Senate seats to every state, when money gets divvied up, every state gets some. And we argue that the monies, Homeland Security monies, should go only to the places where there are vulnerabilities that are likely to be attacked. In other words, real risks. And you can't confuse the two. A few years ago, one senator said to me, you know, son, if they attack our corn crop, this country can't eat. Yes, Senator, you're right. We do need corn. And we'd be very difficult
really
to survive.
He didn't really call you son, did he?
He did. I think I was older than him. But, you know, it is true, but Al-Qaeda is not likely to attack corn. I have said repeatedly I would be willing to forego any agricultural funds for New York City, but I think the agricultural, the places where you grow things, which aren't likely targets, should forgo Homeland Security money. If the federal government wants to have a revenue sharing plan, have a revenue sharing plan. But when you say this amount of money is for Homeland Security, then that should go where it isn't, where the risks are. And the 3 members of the 9/11 Commission who testified with me couldn't have been more in sync with my views. I mean, they went on and on.
Did you make any headway?
Well, you don't know. It is to some extent up to Congress and to some extent up to the administration. Michael Chertoff did announce that two things he did that were last week that were very good for us. One, he said 25% of the monies we receive can go to pay for personnel that we believe are necessary to keep the city safe. That's a very big change. The federal government never pays for personnel because they argue that that's the local responsibility, and if they do it in one place, it just grows. So they were very reticent to do it, but we did get them to change because in the end, I keep saying this again, again and again, my responsibility is to keep the city safe. So I'm going to hire the people and buy the equipment and do the training and get people out there protecting the city and then figure out how to pay for it afterwards. We still have the problem of how to pay for it. Other places wait until they get money and don't do it. So the federal government says, we'll never pay for anything you've already bought. But I can't wait for them. So we try to change that. We haven't yet. But also we say boots on the ground, as I call it, is really what police protection is all about, whether it's against crime in the streets or terrorism. And we need help there. We don't need more fancy equipment as much as we need to pay more salaries. So Chertoff has said we can put 25% of the monies we get towards that. That's a very big deal for us, and I appreciate that. And I said nothing but nice things. You know, we always want to criticize Chertoff and the administration. When they do something right, I think we should give them credit. Two, I think that he allocated some money for transportation protection between New York and New Jersey, tunnels and bridges,
million,
whatever it is. But, you know, we need all of this. Keep in mind, the monies you get in Homeland Security are a very small percentage. Our police department costs us $5.5 billion a year. Our fire department, a couple billion dollars a year. So, you know, another $100 million more or less. It's helpful, but it isn't the difference between us keeping the city safe or not keeping the city safe. So, anyways, those two things are going in the right direction. We want Congress to require that all monies go risk-based, not spread around. That, so far, Congress has not been willing to do because they all want to be able to go home to their constituents and say, I brought something home. Right. Absolutely. And I'm saying, bring home the money. I don't have a problem with that. I pay my taxes, too, but have it from a different pool.
How about the House passed what they call the 9/11 bill, and it calls for a number of things, including the complete inspection of containers coming into the United States by some date in the future, and also plane cargo. All of those things are great goals, but they didn't fund any of this.
Well, not only didn't they fund them, some of them are just not practical. There is no known ways at the moment for us to continue to have a life and look at all 11 million containers. It's, you know,
or the stuff that goes in the belly of an airplane.
Yeah, I mean, the trouble is that Congress tends to focus on procedures rather than policies. And that's because policies are much more difficult to write, and the procedures they don't have to enforce, so it doesn't make any difference whether they're nonsensical or not. It is true we have risks with containers coming by ship and by rail over the Canadian border and Mexican border and by truck and by air. And the ways that you protect yourself is you can't obviously do every one, so you do them in a pattern that nobody can predict, and therefore you hope you catch. And that's the ways you use limited resources to do anything big. For example, we can't put a cop on every corner, but you never know when we're going to put a cop on your corner. So hopefully that keeps you behaving better than if you knew you were not going to have a cop on that corner. And we've, you know, a lot of this stuff, I think the good news is that we work very well. For example, the FBI, I said in my testimony, I was asked, they are as cooperative and helpful as you could possibly be. Do they know everything? No, no more than anybody else knows everything. But the cooperation between the federal government, the FBI, and the city government, the police department, is good. Cooperation between Congress and with votes money and New York City is not all that good, or between Homeland Security. Some things they do great, some things they don't. Well, let's see. Chertoff has yet to this time around allocate monies. And I've said, look, Michael, we need more. The threats are here. Threats are against targets that overseas people think represent America, the skyline of New York City, the skyline of Washington, the skyline of Chicago, the pictures of the Pentagon and the White House and the Capitol building, arguably some iconic structures in the West Coast, San Francisco, L.A. But that's where al-Qaeda is most likely to attack, and that's where you want to have...
Do you have a sense that in Washington the immediacy, the true threat of terrorism has diminished?
I don't know.
Emotionally?
I can't speak for what motivates people. I just look at the results. My job is to keep this city safe. We need help from Washington. But what we need is money is one thing, but we need some other things. And it's not necessarily some of the things that they vote on. For example, you have to get control of our borders. The only ways to get control of our borders is to solve the immigration issue. The only ways you're going to solve the immigration issue is to give visas to the 12 million that are here and to have a Social Security card that has a biometric in it so that every employer knows who their workers are, and take away the ability for people to come across a border, overstay a visa, and get a job. If you do that, then the number of people who try that diminish dramatically, and then we get control of our borders. You're going to give me an argument that, oh, you know, people that are here broke the law, so we shouldn't give them visas, or people, we don't need a different kind of Social Security card. You may be right in every one of those things, but if you want to solve the problem, you have to do something that would make the problem much more manageable. Why is this important? Because if we can't get control of our borders.
There's no conversation about that in Washington virtually at all now.
That was an election issue. You don't understand. That was for the last election.
Okay, we'll wait to see what the next one's about.
Right? It'll be a different issue, presumably.
No, I suspect that immigration's going to still be there. I think it's huge. Before we go to the half-hour break here, reaction to the president's address the other night?
Well, look, I think everybody wants to, including the president and those who are on the left, the right, the hawks, the doves, everybody wants to find a solution, two things that may or in fact be mutually exclusive. I don't know. One is they want the war to end, the killing to stop, and our troops to come home safely, and they want to make sure that we're safe from terrorism. Now, some people argue the war is necessary to fight terrorism. Others say it does not do that, or we can do it in other ways. But what I'm going to do is focus on fighting a different war. My job is to fight the war on the streets of this city against street crime, against poverty, against lack of education. And I'm going to speak out on issues that affect New York City where I can have an effect. So immigration, we have 500,000 undocumented here. Guns on the streets of our cities. I have nothing against the Second Amendment and people's right to hunt and bear arms, but just they don't belong on the big streets of the city. I'm going to speak out on the educational system in this country, which is a disgrace and is not preparing our kids for the future. And you see it in this gap that keeps growing between the wealthy and the poor. And I think that's to a great extent a reflection of the value of education. That's only going to get to be a bigger problem unless we fix our school systems, which we're trying as hard as we can here. We're always going to have that around. So those are the things that I'm going to focus on. And I will let Congress and the administration focus on the war in Iraq and keeping this country safe from external threats that overseas. And when the external threats get here, then that's my job.
All right, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that education as we continue here at 77 WABC. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. My name's John Gambling. This is WABC. You're looking for help.
We are looking for help. We're always looking for help, but in this case, it's something that the average person can help us with. What we try to do is to answer the question of how many people are living on our streets, because if you don't know what the problem is, you can't fix it, and nobody wants people having sleeping on the streets of our city. But in the past, people were afraid or didn't want to know the answer or weren't willing to go and actually face the facts or find out what the facts are. Linda Gibbs, who was formerly running homeless services and now is the deputy mayor responsible for a number of agencies, including that agency, started something, and it was to actually go out and find out the information by counting the people that sleep on the streets. And it is a thing. It's a process that we've done every year. We think there are about 3,800 people sleeping on the streets. At least that's the number we found last year, which was down about 13% from the year before. And we hope this year it'll be even lower. But whatever it is, we've got to get the numbers.
What do you need, volunteers to count?
So we need volunteers to go out and count. And we do this on one night. We go out. We look in every borough, in every place we can think of where people might be sleeping. We even hire some people to put on costumes and look like they're homeless and go out into these places and then see whether we find them. So based on the percentage of those we find, we can estimate.
Oh, you put decoys out for your searchers to find.
Fine. And then if you get 20% of the, let's say you get 80% of the decoys, you find them. You can assume that there's 25% more homeless than what you actually counted because there were 25% more decoys that you didn't get. So we try to do something that's really serious. And we need volunteers. You can call 311 or nyc.gov for to volunteer. Anybody can do it. We need some. It's going to be on Monday, January 29th, although if the weather is horrendous, we'll do it on February 5th. And we need volunteers. We also need some team leaders, and those are people who have done it before.
You need what, 2,500?
We need roughly 2,500 people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you volunteer, you go out all night, and you count. And it's a great thing to do for the city. And then we get the real numbers. Now, hopefully the numbers have come down, but if they've gone up, the numbers will be out there. You know, me, I've always put the numbers out. So it's called Hope 2007, and it's 2 weeks from this Monday. 2,500 volunteers, and we're going to look in subways and parks and streets and other public places, and hopefully we'll see a continuation of the drop in the people that live on the streets.
Speaking of helping people, the Child Services?
ACS.
ACS. A story this morning that a significant rise in abuse reports, up some 60%.
The abuse reports typically come from the Department of Education. It is the teachers that notice that a child is absent too much, or that a child has bruises, or that a child looks scared and isn't behaving in a normal
way. It's not
a
neighbor, generally speaking.
It's not a neighbor, generally. It's mm-hmm. a school system. And I think part of the answer is, after that terrible tragedy of Nix Mary Brown a year ago, maybe people are a little more sensitive. Maybe they tend to report a little bit
more. That's a good thing.
That's a good thing, yeah. I mean, you don't want to say that there aren't more cases. I hope that there aren't, but it's the first thing is there are more reports. And we have increased the staff of ACS, so the caseload for every worker is down. But remember, you're talking about families that are so dysfunctional, they kids get beaten. Nix Mary Brown's parents were on trial for murder. I don't know how you explain that, but that's the real world. And then you have the issue of a child has been hit. What do? Do you take the child away from its parents and put it in foster care, or do you leave the child there? It's partly up to ACS. It's partly up to the courts, partly up to the legislature. There's no right answer in any of these cases, or in many of these cases. Some are so obvious you certainly want to take it away. Some, it turns out that, yeah, the kid did fall down the stairs, and it wasn't that the parent beat them. But sometimes there's just no right answer. And the judge and the caseworker have to make a decision. And, of course, if it turns out they're wrong, then everybody blames them.
Right.
Yeah, it's a horror show for them. It can ruin their careers and their family life and everything. So, you know, they have a danger. They have a tough job with there's no right answer.
Call today from, I think, one of the city council members for more judges to deal with child abuse.
I don't know that we necessarily need more. It's easy to call for it because you got to say something if you want to get reelected, I suppose. But I don't think that we have a problem of not enough judges. It does take a while. The court system does go slower than you would like, but I'm not sure it's a manpower issue. It may be a procedural issue as much as anything.
Did you see the story in the New York Times this morning, front page, about congestion cars in New York City? Interesting that the majority of them come from the five boroughs, not from New Jersey, Long Island.
Yeah, I mean, we all want to jump to the end game and say, let's have congestion pricing. Of course, nobody wants to be the one that has to pay. Congestion pricing is not...
I know you were looking at that. Are you still a fan of it or not so much?
I don't know that I'm a fan. I said, well, look at everything. You know, there's no simple answers to complex problems. For example, let's deliver everything at night and then the trucks won't clog the streets during the day. Except that people are out at night. They don't want the trucks tying up the streets. And trucks make noise, like sanitation department, when they pick up the garbage and back up and all that sort of stuff. And stores don't want to have to open and take deliveries at night because it costs more, and that'll be reflected in higher prices. So that's not an answer necessarily, although some things we do at night. Congestion pricing. We have forms of congestion pricing already. There are tolls on bridges, for example, coming from New Jersey over into New York. That's a form of congestion pricing. It's not clear that that changes anybody's behavior. And in London, I think their experience lately has been that people adjusted to the charges, paid more. It wasn't doing the reduction that you'd hope to do it in traffic, and they're raising their rates again. That may bring in revenue for the municipality, but the objective was to reduce traffic on the streets.
Which it hasn't done.
Well, I think it did for a while, and it grows back. Nobody thinks that I have said repeatedly that while it's certainly worth looking at, the problem is that you would have to have a break for people that live in the city. And you can see from the Today's Times story, 50% of the people live in the city.
That doesn't get you at any place, really.
If you do that, number one, it's not going to reduce the traffic as much as you think. And number two, it means people outside the city have to pay something people inside the city do. And that's called a commuter tax. And the politics of it are that Albany will never let us do it. So, you know, but let's talk about it.
You are in the pantheon of the business world and and the government as well now that you've been mayor and been so successful at this. There is a mindset across the country in legislatures across the fruited plain to sell off assets. They want to do this in New Jersey. The governor over there suggested they do it in Indiana. They've already done it. Is selling off the Brooklyn Bridge to a private corporation?
Well, the Brooklyn Bridge.
I use that as an example.
Yeah, no, I mean,
example.
If you did that, you'd have to charge tolls or nobody would want to buy it. But a better example, you could sell off the water tunnel and lease it back. Those are just financial transactions. And it's typically what municipalities are doing, which I couldn't disagree with more, is they're taking the money now to spend, and they're leaving our children and grandchildren for the next 30 years or more to pay because things that we get today.
Because if you sold off the water tunnels
and at least
took all that money, if the people that bought it ignored it, the city would have to take it back.
Well, no, but
right?
you can build in the maintenance that they have to do it, because if they don't do it, you wouldn't pay them the monthly fee.
It's
taking an asset that you're going to use for the next 30 years, taking out all the value today, spending that on higher salaries or
whatever.
You know, going to a party and having a good time. You know, let's go and have a buy a bottle of gin
and
have a
procedure. I mean,
it's having something today and having our kids pay for it tomorrow. It's a terrible idea.
That doesn't mean
there isn't another ways to raise money. We do it all the time. We borrow money to build schools. We're going to use the school for the next 30, 40 years, and we're going to pay for it over 30 or 40
years.
You
pay interest on that money, and you
well, this
pay
is
back.
The same kind of transaction, remember. You're taking the money out from the guy that buys the water tunnel from you, and then you're paying him a monthly or a yearly fee to use that water tunnel. So it's another ways of doing it, but it's an asset that you already have. And you can make the case that we shouldn't be borrowing long-term to build a school, that we should only build schools with money we have today in the bank. It's called pay-as-you-go. The trouble is that we need the schools so badly. I think you can justify obligating our children and grandchildren to pay for a school and getting the school now. Should we sell off assets and use it for operating expenses? No, that's a terrible idea. Selling off a water tunnel and using the money to build another water tunnel, that may not be such a bad idea. But selling the water tunnel, taking the money and using it to give raises
or reduce taxes or something—that's
where I think somebody once said to me, "I'm too liberal for the conservatives." I'm conservative. I think we should actually pay as we go. I'm a big believer in if you want something, that's democracy. You have a right to get it. But you're going to pay for it. Don't leave. Somebody described a children's party is where the parents buy the gifts. A parents' party is where the children buy the gifts, and that's what all these schemes are.
All right, stick around, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and we'll give you the opportunity. All right, we've got some time here. We're going to go to the phones. You've got the questions, and the mayor will have the answers. I can almost guarantee it. 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, you want to start with Michael?
Sure.
Michael in Rockaway, go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
My name is Michael Moran. I'm a fireman in Ladder Company 3. And I was just distressed when I read this morning in today's Post that even pictures of our fallen comrades have to be taken off our lockers at firehouses.
Well, Michael, number one, thank you for everything you do. My kids are safer because of you and all the other men and women of the fire department. The issue was the following. A handful of people, a very small number, put pictures on their lockers, which in this day and age are inappropriate for the workplace, I think is a fair ways to say it. The city could get sued. People could allege harassment and unsuitable workplace. The fire department asked people to not put up, and they were, Playboy centerfold kind of pictures kind of thing, or a handful of messages which weren't particularly nice. They were against different groups. Anyways, it turned out that, people just didn't want to hear it. Some of these guys refused to take it down. And the brass at the fire department said, look, if that's the case, the only thing we'll allow are things like a few family pictures or a flag or a mask card or something. And that's what the rules were. I think somebody tried to gin this up and say, well, we don't allow anything. And if that's the case, if they can't make the difference between appropriate things and inappropriate things, we'll do what any other city agency or anybody in the private sector would do. We have an obligation to make sure that the workplace is appropriate for anybody that visits it, and we will do that. And whatever regulations the fire brass come up with, I will support. They're the ones that are trying to do a good job. And it isn't a freedom of speech issue at all. This is an issue of what's appropriate in the workplace. You have a right to say what you want to say, but the courts have held 1,000 times you don't have a right, particularly if you're a city employee, to do certain things and to have those kinds of inappropriate pictures up. So, it isn't. We're not trying to diss anybody, anybody's family, the flag, those that we lost. It's just that when people abuse the right to put things up, then everybody's going to suffer, and we're paying the price for a handful of people that think it's cute to...
Michael should talk to some of his fellow firefighters that might have that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think in most companies, you know, you just don't let people put things on the walls because of exactly this. It just becomes, we're going to spend all our time deciding whether that... What do you do if the picture of your spouse is a picture of a very attractive man or woman... dressed in a relatively skimpy bathing suit, is that appropriate or isn't it? Well, how skimpy is skimpy? You get to the point, and we're going to spend all that time worrying about that.
You don't have a skimp
scale. And well, any employer has to worry about somebody coming back. Skimp scale, I love that. Every employer has to worry about somebody coming back and suing them.
I understand.
And so you have to err on the side of being cautious.
All right.
That's unfortunately what's...
Terry, you've got the mayor's ear. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Terry. I volunteered for the mayor, and I think he's wonderful.
Terry, thank you.
You are the greatest mayor we will ever have, number one. Number two.
Well, I hope that's not the case. I hope my success is even better, because I'm going to live here.
Impossible. Impossible. I'm sorry to say that, but no one has your knowledge, your common sense, and you stop to think before you open your mouth. You never watch to see if a camera's on you. You just use wonderful common sense.
Terry, you're not the mayor's mother, are you?
No, but I did go to see him all the time, and I watched her, but I could see where it came from. She's a wonderful woman also.
Right.
But I compare anyone that's running for office with the mayor, and God bless him, and may he have many, many years with his family.
Aren't you nice?
Terry, thank you very much. You've certainly put a smile on my face.
And I can attest to that.
And I will tell my mother when I talk to her later today what you had to say.
He is smiling broadly, Terry. Thank you very much. Let's go to Diane. Diane, you've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a complaint. My friend's daughter last night was talking to her husband on the phone, and he was getting carjacked at the time. But he was in New Jersey. She lives in Brooklyn. And when she called 911, they told her, well, you're calling the wrong 911. You have to call New Jersey. So then they told her, call through. She said, how do I do that? They said, call 311. So she called 311, and then they told her, why are you calling us? Call 911.
Diane?
Yes.
You know, number one, I don't know if it happened exactly that way, but if it did, it shouldn't have. I don't know what else to tell you. It is hard. I don't know how you call 911 in another jurisdiction. In fact, if you were, for example, driving up the West Side Highway and on your cellular phone called 911, you are equally or somewhat likely to get a 911 in New Jersey as opposed to a 911 in New York City because the cell phones work that way. And it is an issue, and our 911 should have been able to handle it and tell you and call 911 or switch you to 911 New Jersey, and I will talk to the police commissioner about that. You got an excellent point. Why 311 said that, I have no idea. I'll tell the guy that runs 311 as well. They should have done something different.
We have time for maybe one more. Oh, no, we don't. I'm sorry. We're out of time here. I hear the music coming up behind me. That means we'll have to wait till next week.
It'll be a long week without talking to you, John, but I'm looking forward to next Friday.
Put a smile on my face. Thank you very much. have a great week. We've got lots more as we continue here on the John Gambling Show at 77 W.